You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Wednesday, 24 July. Strong Alphabet results after the close last night. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Jimmy Moyoha, Kumba iron ore results. A chunky dividend, but a reduced dividend, and Transnet. They mentioned it 18 times in the results, but they don't tell us if it's getting better. Jacques Conradi from Peregrine Capital, how they're positioned to benefit from the longer-term Government of National Unity rally. And then Alex Forbes in Investments. They're launching an infrastructure impact fund of funds. We'll get details on that. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. NERSA committee says no to Eskom grid grab. No justification found to discriminate against private sector projects. Business Day, Cashbuild grows revenue 4% in Q4. For the existing stores, revenue increased 3% and new stores added 1%. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 0.2% and NASDAQ off 0.9%. East also red, Sydney down 0.1%, Tokyo down 0.2%, Hong Kong off 0.5%, and Tencent down 0.4%. Commodities are mixed. Green is gold, 2,466. Brent is 81.36. Platinum is red, 9.55, and palladium green at 9.14. Rand is 18.40, Bitcoin 66,000, and top 40 opening call down 255 points, a third of a percent lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Jimmy Moyoha, independent analyst. Jimmy, appreciate the early morning. The Transnet numbers, I mean, my sense is they're doing what they can. They've seen some price weakness in iron ore, but they're still massively profitable in that regard. I think their average sale price was $97. That gives them giant margins. The dividend paid down, but I mean, not a bad dividend. My sense is it's Transnet that is probably still their bottleneck.
Yeah, morning, Simon. Absolutely. Transnet's still a big thorn in their side. The business obviously reliant on that logistics infrastructure, especially at the scale that they operate at. It's very difficult to move the amount of volumes that they need to move by road alone. So definitely still an issue for them. I mean, they've got quite a bit of stockpile sitting within their Sishen operation, and they're not really able to move that because the logistics infrastructure isn't there or isn't up to standard. They have, of course, though, said that they're seeing some improvements from the Transnet side of it, and they're optimistic around the relationship with the new Transnet management team and the fact that the new team is willing to come to the party to get things done. But only time will tell. I mean, we have to wait and see how that unfolds and whether or not that does actually materialize.
Take your point. We also got it from Sasol on Monday in their production update. It was just one line, but they said, you know, Transnet was getting a little bit better, which is definitely what we and the country needs. I mean, aside from the Transnet issues, it is a well-run company. I mean, they've got the iron ore. They ship it. The world needs it. Perhaps demand is a little bit down, but pricing is still almost $100. I mean, there is good profit here in the business.
Absolutely. If you look at the, as you said, where the pricing is sitting versus where their margins are sitting, they're still quite comfortable from a margin perspective, and they're able to reduce costs. At the moment, they are working on more cost savings, and I think they hit just shy of $2 billion in terms of cost savings in this last year. And so this now obviously puts them in a better footing. They know exactly where to optimize what they need to ensure that those margins don't come under too much pressure. But at the same time, the prices aren't coming down significantly to a point where they need to be concerned. I think for Kumba, it is a function of the external environments and the external factors that might exist outside of their business more so than what they're doing internally. Internally, Mpumi Zikalala and her team have been running the business quite well for quite a considerable period of time as well. So it's not that there's internal problems. It's more the environment that they operate in and some of the constraints that are beyond their control, honestly.
Yeah, and exactly the conversation at Miropec from IG on Monday. Management is doing well. There's just a lot of things that they can't manage, and, well, they simply just can't manage that. Jimmy Moyoha, independent analyst, appreciate the early morning. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Are you holding the stock? I mean, certainly, and we stress the point, management is good. It's the environment. And in this case, that environment is, in the case of Kumba, the environment is really logistics. It's Transnet. And if that was working, they would be doing a whole lot better. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money gives a damn. If it could protest and sign petitions, your money would. But your money can do more than that. When you invest in Stanlib's infrastructure investment fund, beyond getting solid returns, you are helping to build a more sustainable future through job creation and positive economic growth. Damn right you are. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Turning off Jacques Conradi, CEO at Peregrine Capital. Jacques, appreciate the early morning time. In your recent note you put out, and you were talking about the scenarios ahead of the election. Scenario three was a ANC sub 45%, a coalition of sorts with the DA. It wasn't the most likely one, but it is where we now find ourselves sitting in July, even if it wasn't the likely scenario. And it does, as an investor on the JSE, it almost makes me feel like a kid in a candy store, because there is so much now potential in our economy, and frankly, really cheap valuations on the JSE. Is that a sense shared by you and your colleagues?
Simon, good morning and thanks. And I'm very much with you there. I'm just very happy as South African that we got the good outcome. And obviously, as an investor, it's a really exciting time on markets now. But what we see is some of the large caps, the banks, the retailers have had probably a 20-30% move off the low. So maybe some of the real initial easy gains have been had. But now what we're trying to figure out is to say, these companies have great management teams. They've been facing headwinds for the better part of 10 years, right, and still managed to eke out earnings growth. What could they do with a bit of an economic tailwind? So it's hard to fully calibrate what earnings recovery we could see over the next year or two as rates come down, the rand strengthens. And also, we haven't actually seen the foreigners enter the equity market. They've entered the bond market. They haven't yet entered the equity market post-election. So what's that going to do with markets if that happens?
I like your point around management. And it was the same story around Sasol. It was the same story around Kumba a moment ago, where they're managing. Management's doing perfectly fine. It's the environment which is hobbling them. We have got, I think of the ShopRite retailers with load shedding, and ditto with the REITs and the like. Are there sectors, you mentioned, we've seen some good moves already. Are there sectors that are of particular interest, or is it just a classic smorgasbord sort of across the table?
I think you'll probably do well owning quite a wide variety of shares, but I think the interesting thing is, and we thought this before the election outcome, is typically if good news happens in a country, you see people go bid for the large cap liquid shares first. So as I said, most of those shares up 20 or 30%. Most of the small mid caps have probably had 5%, 10% moves. Some of them have had no moves. Mm. So I think looking slightly down the liquidity curve is definitely interesting to us. So that's what we've been doing, to say where's this companies that's lagged, where we also think their earnings recovery will come through, where we think the management will execute. So I think there's quite a bit of opportunity still in the SAS small and mid-cap space, which has been unloved for quite a long period of time.
And this is potentially, I mean, you mentioned we've seen some big moves already. I'm thinking, top of my head, you know, Mr. Price is up 25% so far this year. The banks are up 25% pretty much since May sometime. This is going to potentially play out over many, many years. And, you know, some of the listeners who like, oh, I've missed it. Well, you missed the opening bandit, but there's a lot more to go.
Yeah, I would say so. Like, we've got this, the load shedding cost that's going to come back for a lot of these companies. Mm. That's kind of quite a material one. So look for companies where that's been a high cost. A business like Astral, probably one of the highest ones, just in terms of processing and freezing the chicken, is just extremely electricity intensive. So that's obviously massive tailwinds for some of these companies having that. And then, look, I think the consumer is fairly, it's tough on the ground at the moment, is the read we're getting from company results. So we need some rate cuts, and I think we're hopefully getting that the next meeting. So I think once that happens and you start getting the benefit from that coming through with load shedding and other things, hopefully the earnings momentum really picks up in a lot of these companies.
It's been a tough 4 years for consumers. We're going back to March of 2020 when the pandemic, and then of course the inflation, the interest rates. It really does look a better year ahead. You mentioned rate cuts. There's also the two-part. There's expectations that perhaps as much as 40 billion could get withdrawn. Lower inflation, no load shedding, which is a cost, but also it's an emotional. It makes life just gloomy. South African consumer in a very good spot perhaps over the next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, I would think so. I think, as I said earlier, right now it's tough, but I think there's so many tailwinds that could come through. Typically, the first rate cut, even though it's on the margin, it just gives people confidence because you know we've had the peak. You know you can probably expect it to come down further. So I think that's important. And then I think the SARB at the last meeting said 4.5% is there. Now they're base case inflation by the end of this year. And I think we could even go below that with where the rand is now. So that finally frees up income for people to have to deal with that rather than kind of 6 or 7%. So I think there is a lot of reasons to be confident. And also, I think just as you said, load shedding, this election outcome, you think just confidence will look better, like when you can feel more positive about your country, when they can, you can see they've fixed Eskom, when hopefully they can fix Transnet in the next 12 or 24 months if they apply that same playbook. I think that'll just get confidence going, which also feeds on itself.
Changing track fairly significantly, the conversations you and I have had over time, Peregrine, certainly a contrarian investment firm in many senses. Talk me through the style of preference here. Apparently you did quite well in there, and I think a lot of folks are scratching their head saying, hang on a second, Steinhoff is bankrupt, got delisted, but there was some opportunity there for those who were sort of zigging when everyone else was zagging.
Yes, Simon, we love these complicated special situations type investments. And there's actually been two in this period, both Steinhoff Prefs and WeBuy or Transaction Capital, WeBuy Cars. So Steinhoff Pref, I'll quickly touch on. I mean, this was when we probably bought the position in 2017 when Steinhoff was falling apart. And we figured out that this instrument on the JSE, this Pref, was actually secured by Simon Steinhoff stake in their Pref in Pepcorn and Ackermans listed on the JSE, which is a high quality business. So we just felt highly confident you're going to get your money back. And I think, let's say, Transaction Capital more recently, I mean, this is a share, I think we bought it last year at under 5 rand. It was as high as for like 48 bucks like a few years ago. And I think it's just when everyone sees panic and sees the SA taxi situation, it really attracts us to go do the detailed work to figure out where does the debt in this business sit, have they written securities from WeBuy Cars or the group to SA Taxi, figuring out those things. And then in that case, we were sure they didn't. And then obviously WeBuy Cars is just this fantastic SA company. It's probably one of the best kind of car retailers in the world, in my opinion, just their pure business model. So you could get access to that at a very, very cheap price. And if you look at it now, I think you got it at 5. Your WeBuy Car stake is worth 8 rand per share of Transaction Capital. You've got 3 rand left. So it shows you there's, even in tough times, there's always value sitting if you're willing to go dig for some truffles where others aren't looking.
Yeah, and doing your homework. That's the critical part. But yeah, I like the idea that where there's a disaster, there's often opportunity. Jacques Conradi, CEO of Peregrine Capital, always appreciate the early morning.
Your money knows it's not just about the money. It's about your returns, returning the favor and empowering people. Your money can do more to change the narrative. Beyond delivering consistent returns, investing in the Stanlib Kanyisa Impact Investment Fund can help eradicate poverty and protect the environment. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Lebo Tabisi. He's Deputy Chief Investment Officer at Alex Forbes Investments. Lebo, appreciate the time today. AF Infrastructure Impact Fund of Funds, new launch from yourselves there at Alex Forbes. What's the big idea behind this fund? I mean, obviously, it's infrastructure, but it's importantly, it's impact investing.
First of all, thanks for your time, Simon. And I think definitely a very exciting time for the business in this regard. And I think it's always important to reiterate that, you know, I mean, we've got long track records in looking at various opportunities, and we've got a 2-decade long track record when it comes to private markets. And, you know, I mean, looking at the current climate, you know, there was, you know, amendments to the pension fund regulation to allow for pension funds to access infrastructure, you know, and largely because we drive the roads, Simon, we take our children to the schools, we take our parents to the hospitals, and we believe that, you know, infrastructure specifically as an asset class, you know, has an opportunity for us to be able to marry, call it commercial returns that you expect, obviously, to really, you know, sort of manage on behalf of pension fund clients, but to also, in fact, deal with the societal benefits that typically come with it. Your ability to invest in what we otherwise call economic infrastructure, but on the other side, to be able to also, in fact, invest in social infrastructure, schooling, healthcare, and the likes. And so we think it's a great opportunity and time, in fact, to really look at launching or creating another form of access for the institutional market.
And that's a critical point. I mean, part of the name is infrastructure impact. Infrastructure, and whether it be a school, whether it be a renewable energy, whether it be a hospital, whatever it might be, it has impact. It has a direct impact to the communities and the broader community, but also to the broader country. I mean, just an economic benefit and growth down the line.
Correct. And so there always has to be an investment case, Simon. So what we've seen over the long term, that what you expect from an infrastructure investment, as an example, that it must be linked to inflation. And so what we've seen is, you know, we've come out obviously from an environment, economic environment, where we've seen, you know, sort of a high inflationary environment, whether we're talking globally or locally. And in fact, you know, we've seen the assets that we currently have or the exposures that we currently have, in fact, meet that above inflationary, you know, sort of expectation. Mm-hmm. You expect the diversification as an example. And so, you know, beyond just energy, you know, you can invest in wasted water as an example. It's been able to provide downside, you know, sort of risk protection, you know, in an environment where we've seen volatility on the listed markets. But coming to your point around the impact, you know, we are able to measure the number of jobs that have been supported through this program. We're able to measure the extent of the number of children who are being supported from the affordable schooling projects that we have. So a great example is looking at what we already have. The last year's matriculants, as an example, you know, more than sort of 90% of the matriculants were able to get a matric pass, but relative to call it the national average of about 80%. But another good step to look at is how many of those matriculants were able to get a bachelor pass to get to a tertiary institution. So these matriculants, 60% of them were able to get that relative to call it the national average of about 35%. And so, you know, it's a very important that we measure beyond just the return, the ability to measure, you know, the kind of impact. And so an infrastructure is well positioned to be able to do this.
You mentioned a moment ago about how South African funds can now put retirement funds up to 45% of assets into infrastructure. And you alluded to there. One of the beauties of infrastructure, it really is, it's an alternative asset class. It's got lower volatility and low, I mean, if not zero, market correlation. So it's perfect for that building block for a retirement fund.
Correct. And we must remember that at the end of the day, it's important that us as, you know, investment professionals and investment businesses, that it, you know, you are wanting to maximize the return outcome for the pension fund clients as they retire. Mm. And so, you know, call it main focal point is what is the intention, or call it the inflation beating sort of objective. So our fund, as an example, you know, having looked at sort of global research and locally, that our, you know, sort of target is inflation plus 4.5 over, you know, sort of 7-year rolling period. And so definitely focused on, you know, the return outcome. But what risk are you taking to get to this inflation plus 4.5? And really, we've seen that, you know, through the decade-long performance, that actually we've been able to produce considerably lower volatility in the outcomes of, you know, our private market investments. And so the risk-adjusted return has been particularly very good for our clients. And so I would say in the last 7 years, as an example, when we, you know, formally introduced these private market investments in our flagship portfolios, we've seen a, since inception, return over that period of, you know, inflation plus 4. And at, you know, kind of 2/3 of the market volatility. And so that has been a very good outcome for clients.
This has been an area where Alex Forbes has been, I don't want to say focusing, but you have a dedicated investment team that focuses on alternative asset classes, and they've been there for some time. This is becoming an important skill set within the Alex Forbes Investments.
Correct. And I mean, we're, by the way, coming up to almost 3 decades of track record. And track record is incredibly important, in that you can talk credibility, you know, you can talk expertise, you can talk, you know, insights and the likes. And so, you know, we've got a 26-man investment team, you know, looking at various elements of, you know, asset classes, whether we're talking local, global, hedge funds, private markets and the likes. And I think we have one ability to, beyond just you know, going to market and say we're launching a solution. We can actually prove that, in fact, you know, for all the things I've spoken about in terms of the investment case and the societal benefits, that in fact we've had 2 decades long of being able to do it. And that is a very important point, that, you know, track record is exceptionally important. And one thing to really talk about is, you know, you can't belittle the importance of manager selection, Simon, when it comes to, yeah, to private markets. And so a great example that I typically give is that on the listed side, our due diligence is typically anywhere between 2 to 3 hours. And from that, you can have a good gauge of whether you believe that strategy can outperform going forward or not, you know, just given our history. On the private market side, in fact, that is 2 to 3 days. And that largely owes to the asymmetry of information. And so if you look at the performance dispersion across private market investments, that you see that it's actually very wide. Mm. And so manager selection is incredibly important, that you're spending time to understand the backgrounds of the individuals, trying to better understand their deal pipeline. An important thing, the fact that, you know, the managers have to exit out of these investments. So you need to understand what their strategy is to exit. You know, you can't give a client a return plus a project. You know, you actually give the client back the initial investment plus an added return. And so understanding exactly how the manager is going to exit is something that work that you have to do up front. So the manager selection component is very, very important.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I hadn't thought around that asymmetry, of course. That's a huge part of the process. We'll leave it there. It's Lebo Thubisi. He's Deputy Chief Investment Officer, Alex Forbes Investments. Appreciate the time.
We're chatting with Meryl Peck yesterday around the Sasol update. And as you said earlier in the show, management doing what they can. There's stuff they can't control. They are price takers. We asked if you were bullish. Almost half of you said it's looking better. A third said very much. The rest said not at all. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Multi-asset income funds.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.